Good morning. The Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Friday, March 5th, 2021 at 9:02 a.m. We're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205. Present are Senator Hughes, Senator Begich, and myself. Senator Holland is chair. Senator Machicki and Senator Stevens are expected shortly. We do have a quorum to conduct business, though. Thank you to Jeannie, our recording secretary, and Kelsey, our moderator today. And as a reminder, please silence your cell phones. Today we will hear two bills submitted by the governor. My intent is to have the administration introduce these bills, then set them aside for further work. We'll begin with Senate Bill 94 relating to education and supplemental loan programs. And I see Mrs. Sana Eford waiting on standby. Ms. Eford, please put yourself on the record and introduce the bill.
Good morning. First of all, I want to try a sound check. I think I'm getting some feedback.
We hear you pretty clearly. Are you hearing something just when you speak?
Yes.
We're tinkering with ours in the back, and we'll give it a try. I tell you, if I gavel out, if I take it at ease, we won't be able to hear you, so we'll just keep it going. Try that again, see how it's working for you.
Yes, good morning. I'm still getting a feedback. Maybe it's on my end. I'm not sure. Okay, can you hear me now?
Apparently it was on your end. You sound much better. You were breaking up a little bit before, but you're loud and clear right now.
Great. All right.
Ms. Seaford, please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Yes. Good morning, Chair Holland and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sana Eford. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education and Executive Officer of the Alaska Student Loan Corporation. Also on the phone this morning with me to answer questions, I believe, is Carrie Thomas, Director of Program Operations. And so I would like to thank you and members of the committee for the opportunity to introduce SB 94 this morning.
Thank you.
Next slide.
Let's see what slide we're on.
Oh, yeah, we're on.
Slide number three?
Slide two. Should be two.
Please begin.
First, I'd like to share the missions of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education and the Alaska Student Loan Corporation. The Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education supports Alaskans' access to and success in postsecondary education and career training after high school. And the Alaska Student Loan Corporation operates as an enterprise agency of the state of Alaska, funding and facilitating the Alaska Student Loan Program and the related work of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education. SB 94 sustains these ongoing missions to support access to postsecondary opportunities through lower-cost student loans. Next slide.
And I'd like to welcome Senator Machicki to the committee. He just joined us, and we're on slide number three.
SB 94, an act relating to the Education Loan Program and Alaska Supplemental Education Loan Program. This bill addresses requests from Alaska's higher education community and student loan borrowers by expanding eligibility for the Alaska Refinance Loan Program, removing current loan limits from statute, and clarifying language to offer a loan program with immediate repayment to new borrowers. As tuition rates and overall costs to attend postsecondary education have risen nationally and in Alaska, and with the growing need to establish a well-trained Alaskan workforce to fuel the state's economy, it is now more crucial than ever that Alaska students have access to low-cost education funding that meets their full financial needs to achieve career training and or college credentials. federal loans no longer meet Alaska students' full financial needs, and those loans are not always necessarily less expensive than Alaska loans. Private loans also generally cost more and have lower approval rates. Alaska state loan programs fill the gap with low-cost, high-quality loans. Current state loan limits, though, are becoming a barrier to Alaska students who may not be able to obtain funding from private lenders due to strict underwriting criteria. Moreover, students and families who can obtain funding from private lenders are on average subject to higher interest rates than those that the Student Loan Corporation can offer. SB 94 would remove loan limits from statute and provide the loan corporation with the authority to set loan limits to meet the changing financial needs of Alaska's students. Furthermore, the other changes in the bill would expand eligibility for the loan corporation's refinance loans and allow Alaska student loan borrowers the option to apply for a loan program with immediate repayment. These proposed changes would provide additional loan financing options with reduced interest rates and overall lower cost. Next slide.
I'd also like to welcome Senator Stevens. He's able to join us with the committee. We're on slide number 4. Question from Senator Machicki.
Yeah, you read through what looks like slide number 6. So do you want to go back? Because you covered that material, and then, I'm sorry. What slide do you want us to be on?
Director Eford, what slide do you think we're on?
Chair. Senator Machicki, through the chair, I am on slide 4. I was giving you an overall perspective of the bill, and now through slide 4 and 5 and 6, we're going to go through the sectional analysis.
Senator Machicki tends to be an overachiever.
That's great, I'm sure.
We're on slide number 4, Director Eford, if you'd please continue.
Yes, thank you, Chair Holland. So the next few slides, like I said, we're going to go through the sectional analysis. So Section 1 amends AS 1443-122B, which expands the population eligible to apply for Alaska refinancing loans to include previous Alaska borrowers and graduates from Alaska high schools and post-secondary institutions, as well as continuing the current eligibility for Alaska residents.
A question from Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, what I'm trying to figure out with this is, and I want to just make it sure that everyone understands, this isn't offering loans, of course, to Alaska, to other than Alaska residents. What it's offering is those who may have been eligible for a loan and now have moved out of state but still have the loan burden to Alaska. Is that because you've had significant default with these loans, or what is the issue that's driving this change? I support the change, but what is the issue that's driving the change?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, this change is at the request of a number of our student loan borrowers. They, as you said, they still have a nexus to Alaska, which is why we're including they have to be an Alaska high school graduate or a graduate of a post-secondary institution. But it also includes current student loan borrowers or co-signers that had a loan with the state of Alaska, and they have moved out of state, and now they are asking to be able to come back and refinance those Alaska loans into the new refinance loan program, which allows them to consolidate all of their loans into a lower interest rate loan. So it is a benefit for those student borrowers.
And a question from Senator Machicki.
Thank you. So on that point, and Senator Begich, touched on this a little bit, is does that, I don't know what your default rate is currently, but I would assume that the benefit to the state is reducing the default rate of folks that are now far away that would like to meet their commitments, but might be sort of on a margin and not be able to do that. Is that part of it?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, yes, that is part of it. I do not have our current default rates in front of me. We can get that information back to you. But this really is to respond to the request that we have had from borrowers that say, well, you gave us a loan originally. Now you have another program that is a lower interest rate, and we're not eligible for that. And so this is trying to respond to that need and to help those borrowers.
Thank you. A question from Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you, and good morning, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Santa. It's good to see you. I wish you could be here in person, but it's good to have you up on the screen. So, in follow-up to Senator Begich's question, as I read the bill, a person actually would not necessarily need to be an official resident. They could have be a resident of another state, but if they had been a graduate of a high school or post-secondary institution, they would qualify. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, yes, that is correct. They have that nexus of a graduate from an Alaska high school or post-secondary institution.
Okay, I just want to make that clear because sometimes students do go to school out of state and they maintain their Alaska residency, but this would actually allow those who aren't residents, but we still, as Senator Machicki is concerned about the default, if we can still get them to pay back their loans and help out, that's a good thing. One of the things is, and maybe it's not something to be concerned of, but you have the person would have to be a graduate. Sometimes people don't graduate from high school, but they go on to post-secondary institutions. Sometimes they don't even graduate with a degree, but they've gone for a couple of years and they may have a student loan. Would we want to think about, instead of saying being a graduate, saying having attended high school or post-secondary institution rather than a graduate?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, we would entertain thinking about that. I would need to go back and probably do some research. I believe the reason that we were saying graduate is that research and data shows that a graduate is much more likely to pay off their loans and not go into default because they actually completed the program that they received the loan for.
Okay, thank you. That makes sense.
And a question from Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, and I apologize for not being here at the beginning of the meeting, but congratulations, Santa, on your new position. I'm really pleased to see you there. You've been in this building for years in various other positions, but glad you're there. And you may have covered this, so if you have, I apologize. But I'd be interested in knowing the impact that COVID has had on our students and our default rate. And with so many people unemployed in the state, so many people having financial difficulties, and so many people who would appear have no intention of going on to college. This year seems to be sort of a lost year for many students. Do you have any reflections on that, or if you've dealt with that someplace else, I'm willing to wait, but if you haven't, I appreciate your comments.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, and good morning, and thank you. Yes, I'm very excited to be in my new role, but I will say it's 3 months, so I have a lot to learn. I would refer you, if you, I believe you should have received the current Higher Education Almanac that the Commission on Post-Secondary Education publishes each year, and that should have been sent to your office. If not, we will be happy to get each of you a copy of that. But that our edition this year of the Almanac provides information on what we know at this point in time due to COVID. We're still unraveling what that's going to look like because, as we all know, the ramifications of COVID are going to be long-term and probably far-reaching, but we do have COVID-specific information in the almanac, and I would be happy to, like I said, provide you with that. But we have seen a decrease, and I'm sure as you heard from President Pitney, a decrease in applications for post-secondary institutions. We have seen from students that they are postponing their plans to attend post-secondary programs. And so as the commission, we are trying to work to encourage Alaskans that now is the time. Let's go ahead. Let's get on the road to getting them a degree or a certificate or some training credentials so that they can get to work and help get our economy back on track.
Thank you, Santa. I'm sure you're right. I mean, this is an anomaly this year and maybe next year, but eventually we will get back to normal and young people will want to get a higher education. So hopefully we'll get beyond this soon. Thank you.
And a question from Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to follow up on Senator Hughes's comment. I think I want to delve a little deeper in this. The loans themselves, of course, are only going to Alaskan residents. Alaskan residents are the ones who are eligible for Alaska student loans. Is that right? The loan.
Through the chair.
The original.
The
original loan.
Through the chair, Senator Begich. Yes, that is correct. The original loans that this program currently is only open to Alaska residents.
Mr.
And
Chairman,
follow up. I see where you're going.
Yeah. So I want to just really reinforce what Senator Hughes said. You know, whether you're a graduate or not of high school, or whether you're a graduate or not of a post-secondary institution that was located in the state, if you received the loan in the first place, you were a resident, and we want this to apply to people who were once residents as well. And so I would just really encourage you to consider changing that to have attended a high school or post-secondary institution physically located in the state, because it isn't going to change the fact you're not granting an out-of-state resident any benefit. The only people who could have gotten these loans were Alaska residents at the time they got the loans, right?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, yes, if they have a current loan, yes. But we are expanding this to include they may not have a loan. What we are asking is that we could expand these refinance options to those that graduated from an Alaska high school or an Alaska post-secondary institution. They may not have current loans. We are expanding this pool of eligibility for these refinance loans.
I just want to clarify, Mr. Chairman, may I?
Follow up.
But once again, they're not, this isn't making anyone eligible, it's not making an out-of-state resident eligible for a new loan. They would have had to have a previous loan. Isn't that right? But I don't want to be taking our resources and giving them in a loan process to out-of-state residents. What I want us to be able to do is, you, if they were once a resident, they received a loan from us, now that it's many years later or it's 1 year later or however long it is, they come back to us and they go, can you help us consolidate the loans we have with the state of Alaska that we got legitimately with the state of Alaska, even though we are no longer Alaska residents? That's what you're trying to do, right?
Through the chair, yes. That is for the section, the proposed change that we are asking to include previous borrowers or co-signers that would have a loan to now be that are no longer Alaska residents to be able to come back and refinance those original loans. But this also does, we are asking to allow the refinance program to be used by others that have a nexus to Alaska through being a high school or a post-secondary institution graduate. Excuse me.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I may, this concerns me then, because I think what you're saying, Santa, and you have to correct me if I'm wrong here, but And I can't read it in what's in front of me in terms of the bill, but are you saying if I had once attended high school and graduated high school here and had loans from an institution or a federal government or something else out of state, I could come with my loan package to Alaska and the Alaska Post-Secondary Education Commission will help me refinance my entire package of loans that I might have gotten from Idaho or from the United States government? Or are you simply asking for the ability to take multiple years of student loans that were given in Alaska and refinance them as a new package? Because the first thing is unacceptable to me. The second thing is extraordinarily acceptable to me. So I'm curious.
Director Eford?
Yes, Chair Holland. May I ask for Director Carrie Thomas to address this? This bill and all the discussion around the bill and the proposal was put together before I became director, and I want to make sure that I am not, sharing incorrect information. So if Ms. Thomas is available, I would appreciate that.
Yeah, I didn't see her where I was looking at her, but now I see her. Let's see. Carrie Thomas, are you standing by on the phone?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Just fine. Do you think you can wade in on this? Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Yes, for the record, my name is Carrie Thomas, Director of Program Operations for the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
And were you able to hear the questions that Senator Begich had?
Yes, I did.
Could you please address them?
Yes. Through the chair, Senator, the request that's being put forward in the legislation is to expand the eligibility for the refinance program, as Director Eford described. One of the primary reasons for that is it's to assist the Alaskans who took out loans and have left the state, as you mentioned, supporting that piece. But it's also to expand our reach with the loan program as a way to generate income to sustain Alaska's loan programs into the future. So it's an economy of scale issue, and as the corporation's loan portfolio gets smaller, we have certain fixed costs that are spread across our borrowers. So it's a way to increase the size of our loan portfolio and generate income so we can provide the loan program to Alaskans in the future.
Director, pardon me. Senator Begich, would you like to respond?
I think I want to be the director. No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to tell you about my concerns then about this. You're essentially saying to a person who may have once been a resident of Alaska that, hey, whatever loans you have from, again, Idaho or California or maybe the federal government, why don't you bring them here? We'll buy your loan and refinance your loan for you, and then you can only have one payer. It'll be us. But we're taking on the burden of the debt they took out. That's what you're actually saying with this bill. Am I correct in that? And that's not Alaska loans. That's loans from elsewhere. Is that correct?
Director Thomas?
Through the chair, yes, that's what the bill, as stated, is recommending or putting forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I'll just state, I think it would be good to know the default rates on some of the stuff and how it rolls into it. But I can understand where they're going with this as far as trying to generate profits to keep the program going off into the future. All right. Director Eford, would you like to pick up where you left off?
Sure. If there are no more questions, Chair Holland, next slide, slide number five.
Slide number five is up.
So the next section, sections 2, 3, and 4, amend AS 14, 43, 173, A, C, and D. Under section 2A, this eliminates the annual loan maximums in statute and provides for the Alaska Student Loan Corporation to set the annual loan maximums to be more responsive to the needs of Alaska students and higher education institutions, especially as tuition costs change. Section 3, which is 173B, eliminates the lifetime loan maximums in statute and provides for the Alaska Student Loan Corporation to set lifetime loan maximums, again, to be more responsive to the needs of Alaska students and higher education institutions as tuition costs and loan limits change. And Section 4 is conforming change, which will allow the Alaska Student Loan Corporation to set those loan limits for both half-time and full-time loans. Questions?
I see no questions.
So, next slide.
Hi, Director. Oh. We do have a question from Senator McSicky.
Yeah, Ms. Eford, I'm kind of a little bit concerned myself. We're removing limits and opening the Student Loan Corporation to unlimited out-of-state exposure, and I'd like to see a stress test on that. Obviously, we're in a small pool, and small pool is not efficient. This expands the pool. There must be some benefit that you're looking at that perhaps isn't obvious to us here, but this is a big change. And at least Alaskans or Alaskans that have a tie to the state, I mean, there's a reason that was there. There's generally a way to reach out and touch them a little bit more easily than someone that really has no potential or no interest in coming back to the state. So I'm a little worried, but I have a lot of respect for Ms. Pitney. I'm sure that she has a document where she has stress tested what she's asking to do here, what the department's asking to do, and I would like to see that. Right now, that somewhat worries me. Without a limit, you're potentially taking on hundreds of thousands of dollars per student and millions of dollars of additional exposure that may or may not have the same connectivity that you would in collecting those dollars in the future. So it'd be nice to kind of see the math.
Mr. Chairman.
And another question or comment from Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would agree, Director, that would be the, from my perspective, you know, if the issue is that this is somehow going to make a more robust portfolio that provides some level of financial security, I need evidence of it. I'm not convinced, you know, but I think, you know, I understand, you know, Delaware became the corporate head by, you know, changing its laws to make corporations want to, you know, base themselves in Delaware. Maybe this is so that we can become the student loan Delaware of America, and if so, there's a profit to be made there. But let's see what the evidence is to back it up instead of just jumping into perhaps a high-risk strategy that may not have a benefit for Alaskans at all. So that's what I'd like to see if we can, or maybe it's the next committee referral. It has no finance committee referral because it is a zero fiscal note. As a consequence, we may be the only committee that gets to have this discussion, so we likely will need to know what the policy is, Mr. Chairman. So,
Senator Begich, sounds like a great idea, and possibly this is not going to be the last time we're going to talk about this, but we'll ask Director Eford to address that in the future.
Mr. Chair.
And Senator Hughes.
I'm noticing it does have a referral to finance. So,
does it?
Yes.
My apologies, Mr. Chairman. We can let them do the hard work on that.
So, through the chair, Senator Holland, may I address, I think, some of Senator Michicki and Senator Begich's concerns. Just one other statement. The refinance loan program has high criteria to meet for FICO scores for our borrowers. And so We feel like with that and some of the other provisions in the program, there is a lower possible, hopefully, default rate with that because of the higher required credit scores. But we will be happy to provide some data and information about why the corporation feels this would be beneficial to Alaska student borrowers.
Thank you, Director Eford. A question from Senator Stevens.
This has been a very interesting discussion, and it appears to me that we have fixed costs in your organization. We're attempting to, and we have to spread those costs against across all of our borrowers. And so the solution we're being presented with here is to expand the reach and bring in more students. When in fact, maybe what we should be looking at is reducing our fixed costs rather than just expanding the number of students that we deal with.
Director Eford?
That's really not a
question.
Oh, it's just a statement?
It's a statement.
Well, okay, we'll leave that as a statement. And there was a question from Senator Hughes. Senator Hughes?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So this ability to consolidate, to refinance loans, you mentioned there's a higher criteria. I just want to make sure. So there's actually a higher criteria, higher FICO scores for this type of loan than a basic student loan, a student just starting off. So this refinancing, it would be higher, stricter criteria. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, that is correct. We could, and again, I do not want to misspeak because I don't have all the details and interest rates for all of our loan programs right off the top of my head yet, but we will provide you information on the interest rates for all of our loan programs.
And may I
follow up,
please? And the criteria, could you please provide that for your basic loans as opposed to this type of loan? Thank you.
Through the chair, yes, Senator Hughes.
Question or comment from Senator Michicki.
Yeah, the reason I referred this bill, even though the discussion has been about a zero fiscal note, the reason I added the finance referral is I just have a very difficult time. I don't want to use the word believing because that can be taken the wrong way. But looking at the bill, I had a very difficult time in the consideration of where it would be referred that there wouldn't be a fiscal impact. So I think that information is really important. I know it's going to finance, but before I could even support it moving on, I'd like to have a greater understanding, Mr. Chairman. So thank you for that.
All right. Director Eford, do you copy on all that?
Chair Holland, yes, I do.
I believe we might be on slide 6 right now.
Yes, I believe we're on slide 6. So slide 6 is section 5, which amends AS 1443-175. And this provides for the commission to offer future student loans with an immediate repayment option. Such a loan would reduce costs for student borrowers because interest would not be deferred and capitalized. Such a loan would be an option new student borrowers could choose to apply for to lower cost and would not impact our current borrowers. So immediate repayment has been shown to be an option where an in-school student borrower would start repaying their loan, possibly just interest only, while they're in school to help get them in the habit of making loan payments, helping them understand the obligation for the loan, and it also, over the life of the loan, reduces the amount because of the interest is not accruing when they are in school and not paying.
No questions, Director Eford? Did you want to move to slide 7?
Thank you, Chair Holland. So, of course, slide 7 just provides for an effective date of July the 1st, 2021, which would be the beginning of FY22. And next slide, 8, is the fiscal note. The commission did determine that the bill has a 0 fiscal note. It is not anticipated to increase agency operating costs. And as you may know, all of the loan operating costs are funded through receipts from the Alaska Student Loan Corporation. And we anticipated that there would not be additional operating costs associated with this bill since we are currently providing these services.
Seeing no questions.
Actually, I do have a question.
I'm sorry, we do have a question from Senator Hughes.
Yes, just reflecting on what you just said, because you're already doing these services, well, you're definitely going to get a lot more applications. Have you figured out any kind of projection of how many applications you might be applying, and what kind of additional debt that this might mean you'd be taking on in a year's time?
Director Eifert, I'll remind you, you do have a lifeline out there with Director Thomas.
Yes, thank you, Chair Holland, because I was about to take that lifeline for you. Thank you.
Director Thomas, are you listening in?
Yes, I'm here.
Did you hear the question?
I did. Through the chair, Senator, we haven't projected that. At this point, it's really challenging to project how many former Alaskans or additional borrowers or applicants we would get and what amount of debt they would have. When we initially rolled out the refinance loan program several years ago, we set an amount in the budget for loans in the first year of the program just because we didn't know what to anticipate. So we do have a history with controlling for an unexpected large number of applications, and I would assume we would do something along those lines. And if I may, I wanted to address the discussion on the sections 2, 3, and 4 about the loan limits.
Yes, Director Thomas, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Sections 2, 3, and 4 don't relate to the refinance loan program. They relate to the in-school loans that we provide, the Alaska Supplemental Education Loan, which is only available to Alaska residents or those attending post-secondary education in Alaska. So the current maximum for those loan programs is for the annual cost that are unmet after grant scholarships and federal aid, and they're insufficient to meet a large number of students' needs on an annual basis. So the request to increase the maximum isn't related to the refinance loan request on eligibility. It's strictly for the annual loans that are made to Alaska residents or students attending in Alaska. So I just wanted to get that on the record and clarify that.
Yes, Director Thomas, thank you for that excellent clarification. Question from Senator Begich.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I understood that was only to the Alaska loans, and I was actually going to, I should have commented on it at the time, but this is a good idea given that the cost of education continually changes. And what this does is it gives the power to the Post-Secondary Education Commission to adjust to those changes that are absolutely out of their control. Otherwise, we have arbitrary limits that were set years ago. So I really appreciate these three sections of the bill.
And a question or comment from Senator Machicki?
Just on the analysis, this is for Director
Thomas
or Ms. Eifert, Director Eifert, right?
Yes, Director.
Sorry, I'm rusty on my titles. I'm curious, in your analysis, when you provide it to us, of what the exposure and benefits are of expanding the program, I'm curious what happens if this administration actually does forgive student loans, and if that dramatically impacts your interest income. I don't know how that structure would work. I assume they would just satisfy a loan that would forego future interest income to the corporation. So I'm curious if you analyze that impact as well when you get the information back to us. I don't need an answer right now, but I don't know if any of us know how that would work, but it seems like something that keeps coming back, and it'd be nice to know how that would affect the program.
Director Eford or Director Thomas, did y'all want to comment on that? I don't think Senator Machiku is actually expecting an answer on that, except that maybe it sounds like a very complicated subject.
Through the chair, Senator Machiku, we are in conversations about how any loan forgiveness options may affect us and what that financial effect may be. So that is certainly on our mind.
And another comment from Senator Begich.
I apologize, Mr. Chairman, for talking so much, but just today I read that, forgiveness in the past has always been considered part of income, too. So you have to actually report your forgiveness as income, and that the bill that is being considered right now would actually remove that stipulation. So that's something that I don't know if the Post-Secondary Education Commission has considered that, but that is a tremendous boon to those who have student loans.
And a question or comment from Senator Hughes.
Yes, and this has more to do with the academic achievement and graduate rate, but I'm just wondering if that immediate payback where a student is realizing that they're having to pay these bills associated with the classes they're taking, do you know if there's any research that shows those students are apt to do better academically and are more apt to graduate if they have to start paying and realizing that this is costing and they want to do the best they can in their degree work?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, in conversation with the Education Finance Council and some of our other professional organizations, there has been anecdotal references to exactly what you're talking about, that this does create that connection between I'm working towards something that I am paying for and responsible for. I'm not sure if there is specific research or data, but we will look for that.
Thank you.
All right. I believe there are no more questions from the committee. Director Eford, does that conclude your presentation for today? Did you have any final comments?
Yes, Chair Holland. I just want to say thank you very much for letting us introduce this bill, for your questions, your thoughtful consideration of this. I would like to address one other piece, and it's for Senator Stevens' comment. I really want to let the committee know that the Commission on Postsecondary Education over the past 5 years has reduced their operating footprint. They are down by, I believe, almost half of their positions from a few years ago, and so we are working diligently to ensure that we are that we are looking at our operating costs, doing our due diligence to ensure that we are providing the best service at the lowest cost for Alaskans. So I thank you all very much for your time today.
Director Eford, Director Thomas, thank you for your presentation and your response to questions. We will now set Senate Bill 94 aside. Next, we move to Senate Bill 58 relating to funding for correspondence programs. And I believe that would be Commissioner Johnson. Commissioner Johnson, if you'd like to place yourself on the record and introduce the bill.
Thank you, Chair Holland. And is my audio all right?
Loud and clear.
All right. Well, thank you. And thank God for people like Executive Director Santa Eford. I only taught fourth grade math, so most of what you just did was way over my head, and I just sat here really appreciating her expertise. Thank you for the opportunity to present Senate Bill 58, an act addressing public funding for public correspondence programs operated by Alaska school districts. With me today is Director Heidi Teschner, the Director of Finance and Support Services, and she'll follow my brief introductory remarks and walk the committee through the bill and accompanying materials and be able to explain how this works with the formula that you're familiar with. I'll make a few remarks and then take any questions if you'd like, and then invite Heidi to explain the technical parts of the bill.
That would be fine.
Please Alaska. Begin. I'm sorry?
That's fine. Please begin. I thought you were waiting for me.
Thank you, and thanks for the opportunity. Alaska currently, as you know, offers a multitude of public educational options for families. We have traditional brick and mortar schools. We have correspondence programs, charter schools, vocational schools, alternative schools, residential schools. Offering this educational variety recognizes student learning needs, creates ways to diversify and enhance the vibrancy of our communities, and is critical to our state's economic future. Currently, we fund students differently based on how they choose to engage with the public school. Correspondent students currently are funded at 90% of the BSA, base student allocation, without going through the formula. This means that under current law, a district does not receive the full value of an ADM for a correspondent students, nor the extra funding that is part of the ADM multipliers, for example, funding for special needs students and funding for career and technical education in the correspondence programs. This school year, as you know, 2020-2021, we saw a 92.3% increase in correspondence students compared to prior years, or last year, 2019-20, largely due to the pandemic. But beyond that, over the last 10 years, from fiscal year 2011 through 2020, correspondent student counts have gradually increased at an average rate of about 3.6% each year. We know that some students will return to their local neighborhood schools, but a significant number may not, or they will take a couple of years to do so or more. More likely, though, some families will want to explore hybrid models where students remain connected to their local neighborhood schools and teachers, yet have flexibility in scheduling, in calendars, and in content. So with that, I'll finish with three specific benefits that I see in this bill, and then turn it over for questions and Director Teschner. Those three things are, one is, it provides long-term stability for school districts. The best way to stabilize the impact of shifting enrollment that we've seen this year and will probably continue is to recognize the cost of educating a student remains no matter where they are enrolled. This conversation actually started for school districts before the pandemic, as in the last decade or more, students began participating in online learning and remote learning. So districts would ask, how do we count a student that took one or more courses online, but also took courses at the local school? In other words, if they participate in a class remotely, is that homeschool or is that regular school for funding? So this bill moves in the direction of recognizing all students and the cost of their education. So that's the first one, long-term stability for districts. Second, it provides flexibility and funds innovation for educators. The formula uses multipliers to reflect the cost of education. The typical correspondent student in the past is much different than today. Currently, there's no factor for correspondent students for special education, yet more and more special needs students participate in correspondence programs. There's no factor currently for voc ed, which is a growing need in innovation using distant and remote technologies to expand the opportunities for voc ed for students. So, for example, the funding allows educators to continue developing educational opportunities outside the traditional classroom walls. Finally, under flexibility for educators, this funding gives an opportunity to districts Most districts have a correspondence program, but this funding gives opportunity to districts and schools that don't have a correspondence program, because it's enough funding that even if you have a few number of students participating, it's enough that they can develop the programs based on the needs and desires of the families, especially that have been made evident during the pandemic, and as families and communities begin the process of emerging from the changes of this past year. And then finally, in addition to long-term benefit for districts, flexibility and innovation for educators, this provides a pathway for families to remain connected to their local neighborhood schools or districts. As I've said before, it will take a while for families to sort out how the pandemic has impacted their own lives and routines. Families value their local schools, and they want them to be funded. This bill gives them the assurance that they can remain connected to the public educators and schools while also adjusting how they remain connected. It appears that telework and other changes in societal routines will remain for many families. That will most likely result in families desiring more options and flexibility in education routines and funding that supports those opportunities for their schools and districts. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stop for questions and or turn it over to Director Teschner, who will walk through the sectional part of the bill.
I see no questions. I'm sorry?
I was trying to be deferential to anybody else who might have questions, but I have questions.
You have a question? Question from Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, a couple questions just to help me understand better. First, just for clarification, when you say increase of 3% generally on average over the last few years, of course, excluding this year in correspondence, you mean 3% increase in the number of correspondents, not 3% of the total population of students. You mean a 3% increase in the number of those attending correspondence. So 3% of 17 is what, you know, whatever that is, and that would be the increase. Is that right?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, yes, and Director Teschner can give you the exact numbers, but traditionally, before this year, a bit over 10% of our student population in the state is correspondence students, even before the pandemic. But that's been steadily growing.
Mr. Chairman, just a couple more.
A question from Senator Begich.
Commissioner, why did we set it at 90%? Is it, and let me predicate that with a partial answer. Wasn't it because we don't provide, when we do correspondence course, some of those very services that we do provide within the school to the correspondence? You know, counseling services aren't as readily available, ability to work as readily with special education students. And aren't those also the reasons why those elements of the formula weren't considered with determining 90% of basic aid? I think that's changed, but weren't those the reasons why, and then why would this have changed? Giving you an opportunity to explain that.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Begich, I'm not sure what the rationale was for why it was set that way. How you described it is probably part of it. It used to be 80%, and then the legislature increased that to 90%. And as I briefly mentioned, you know, what we often typically think of as a correspondence student is based on our experience. So I took some correspondence courses in college even. I got the packet, I did the assignments, I put them in an envelope, and I'm showing my age here, and then I put them in an envelope, and I put a stamp on it, and mailed it. And the typical correspondence student of 20 years ago or whenever those were established is very different than it is now because of advances in technology, advances in our society and economy and how the workforce is. And so correspondence programs in the state it's very exciting. They do offer all of these services now. They do serve students of all needs. It's not just students that are high achievers. They serve students that, you know, I've been at correspondence offices where they specifically are serving students that did not do well in their traditional school for whatever reasons, difficulty at home, whatever. And the correspondence programs were able to serve those students with counseling, with extra academic support, and, you know, connections to their local school district. So I think that's why the conversation had started several years ago about increasing this, is because correspondence schools are now offering many, if not all, of the same services as they offer in some of our traditional schools.
Mr. Chairman, if I
may. Another question from Senator Begich?
Yes, and the answer is what I perceived was true, and I'm glad to have it on the record now that we understand that the variety of services. But the only other question I have, and it's one that concerns me, it's the – you mentioned it will only affect 32 out of 54 districts. And of those other 22 districts, are I'm just wondering, are they mostly rural, or are they mostly semi-urban or urban? And what do we do about those? How do we address those districts? And what I'm trying to do is ensure that we're not creating more inequity in our process of providing education. But I actually don't know the answer to the question I'm asking, which is, who are those other 22 districts? Not all of them, of course. You don't have to go through them, but how are we serving them, and how does this serve them?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, I don't have in front of me which districts don't have programs, but as I also briefly mentioned, I think this incentivizes districts to, because any district can have a correspondence program if they want. And Director Teschner can mention the specific schools, school districts that don't, but with funding correspondence students at 90% of the BSA without going through the formula, if you start a program and you only start with 10 or 15 students, especially if you're a small rural district, that's financially difficult to get the program going in a way that's, will attract families, especially with these other large programs out there. This bill, to me, is a great opportunity to provide districts the incentive and the opportunity, the resources to develop their own programs and connect in this way with local families that may be considering a hybrid engagement with their local public schools. Because even if you had 10 students initially and you began this program, it would be enough funding to develop the program, to be innovative, to provide all those services, and to, enhance and extend the other programs that you have in the district.
Thank you.
A question from Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you. And I also stuffed papers in an envelope many years ago, and that is what I think we think of. But I'm also very aware, because Mat-Su Central is the largest school in the Mat-Su School District, and that is the correspondence program. And it happens to be attached, and members here may not know that, but it's we share the building as a legislative information office. And my oh my, is that a busy parking lot with parents and families coming and going and kids. And I think it might be helpful, Mr. Chair, to this committee for us to understand, you mentioned counseling. I'm not sure what all Mat-Su Central, but if we could actually maybe hear from one of those schools the different services. I don't know if they, for instance, have a school nurse, whether they organize field trips, whether they have access to libraries, all those kind of services that we think of students having in brick and mortar. But I think it'd be helpful for us to understand how correspondence schools have evolved and what they do offer, because it is a growing trend. And I know I've heard from some families who do plan to continue that after the pandemic, because it did work for their children. Other parents are very eager to have their children in-person brick and mortar. But I think if we're going to be considering anything like this, we need to understand what the programs are offering. So I don't know if it would be possible to hear from some of the correspondence programs and the various additional services that they provide. Thank you.
Commissioner Johnson, do you have any comments on that?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, Mat-Su Central, Principal John Brown at that school would be fantastic to have in front of the committee. I think we suggested some programs to the chair, so I think that would be fantastic. Mat-Su Central, for example, but there are other programs in districts that have offices around the state. Massachusetts Central has a library. They have resources that families can check out and use. They have a place for study groups. They have counseling and many other services right there in the facility. And that's a great example of how correspondence programs have evolved, because parents want some of those expanded opportunities, but they want to remain connected to public educators in their public schools. And that's one example of others that has been very sensitive to that growing desire of families and created the programs to make it happen and integrate it into local neighborhood schools. So I just wholeheartedly agree, and Principal John Brown would be a fantastic person to share that information.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. I'll just remind the committee we have a 10:30 session today, so we're going to have to curtail it about 10:15 or 10:20. And we still have to hear from Director Teschner. But a question or comment from Senator Machicki?
Well, I'll just ask it quickly, but I don't need an answer right now. I mean, in previous meetings, I did not know, and this was my understanding, that homeschool programs provide 1.9 students per ADM versus just the 90%, and that correspondence is 0.9. Did I misunderstand that previously?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, if I understand your question, sometimes we use the word homeschool, sometimes we use the word correspondence. They're the same thing. There's not a difference. And so correspondence students, or if you call it homeschool students, are 0.9 of the BSA. If I'm getting that distinction wrong, Director Teschner can clean that up. But we use those terms interchangeably, and it really fits the old model. We need to come up with a better term.
Mr. Chairman, we can take it up in another meeting. I may have misunderstood that they were double counted.
I believe that's if they lose 5% of their recruitment, and then they get 75% because of hold harmless, so it winds up being about 1.6 for the first year. That might be where you're going with that. Senator Hughes?
Yeah, so within a district during the pandemic, so if a student is in a brick-and-mortar school and they move over to the public correspondence or the public homeschool, the districts are asking that they still get paid as if the child were in the brick-and-mortar school, but they also would be getting the 0.9. So then you have the 1 plus the 0.9 that they'd be getting.
And that's still if it's the hold harmless and they have to drop 5% of their recruitment, I believe, for that to kick in. Maybe? Well, we should probably move on. This would be a great question for the next, maybe even for Director Teschner to address. But Commissioner Johnson, thank you for your comments. I believe, Director Teschner, if you'd like to be in your presentation.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Heidi Teschner, and you can hear me okay, right?
Just fine.
Okay. For the record, Heidi Teschner, I am the Director of Finance and Support Services with the Department of Education and Early Development, and we appreciate the opportunity to present Senate Bill 58 to you this morning. I will start out with the sectional analysis. It's not very long. So in Section 1, it amends Alaska Statute 14-17-410, the public school funding title, subsection B1C, by moving the correspondence student average daily membership up in the foundation formula after the district cost factors and before the special needs and vocational and technical instruction funding multipliers. Section 1 further amends subsection B1D by removing the correspondence student calculation from the end of the formula adjustments when determining basic need. Section 2 amends Alaska Statute 14-17-430, the state funding for correspondence study, by removing the 90% factor for a correspondence student and clarifying that the new funding allocation for a correspondence program is calculated by using the average daily membership report as reported under Alaska Statute 14-17-410, subsection B1C. essentially counting a correspondence student as a full average daily membership, or ADM. And Section 3 of the bill just establishes the effective date of July 1, 2021, the start of fiscal year 2022. And Chair Holland, that is the sectional analysis. Are there any questions on that?
Any questions from the committee? I see no questions from the committee. Is that the end of your presentation?
No, Chair Holland. I have three documents I just wanted to point out to the committee and kind of walk through just to help address some of the questions that have already been asked this morning. So the first document I am going to address is it's labeled Foundation Funding Formula. It's a blue tables. There's two pages to it. So the first page shows the steps of the current funding formula as it's set out in statute. So noted on this page is the factors, the associated statutory references, and then the statewide totals for the projected fiscal year 22 statewide totals for each of the elements in the formula, each of the steps. You'll note on this page that and as we've stated, the correspondence average daily membership is applied at the end of the formula, right before we determine the final district-adjusted average daily membership. And as the commissioner noted earlier, this means that based on current law, a district does not receive the full value of a correspondence student or the extra funding formula factors, the special needs factor and the vocational education factor. Page 2 of that document shows the change under Senate Bill 58. So that green, the green box is now where correspondence would lie in the formula. So, and there's two changes to correspondence under this bill. So the first one is that it's now based on a full one ADM, not a 90%, as it's currently set in statute. And the second change is that the average daily membership for a correspondence student would be included in the formula after the district cost factors, before the special needs and vocational education and special education intensive factors are applied. Through Senate Bill 58, more financial resources would be made available to school districts to help cover the cost of providing special education services to correspondence students, and would provide more resources so correspondence students would have a larger allotment to pursue career and technical education opportunities. Commissioner Johnson expanded on that quite well in his introductory remarks. Since the proposed change would provide more financial resources to districts operating correspondence programs, it could be assumed that the allotments provided to students for their education should go up, affording the student more educational options and opportunities. And Chair Holland, that is, welcome any questions on this this document.
Question from Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you. So I'm looking at the final bottom right box on the first page and the second page, and it's a difference of about $35 million. Is that correct? And is that
through the
estimate the cost would be to the state for FY22 if SB 58 were to pass?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Hughes. Yes, it is at about a $35.5 million cost to the state under this proposed legislation.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Hughes was going right where I was going, which is that this represents a $35 million investment by the state in ensuring that this enhanced correspondence we've been doing actually meets the needs of the students. There's a lot of concern about that. And I would just, we've had a number of conversations here about the SB 42 and SB 8 bills that enhance reading and enhance pre-kindergarten. Combined, those total those bills would at best offer up to an additional over time an additional $17 million to the base student allocation the formula funding. It would add roughly $17,200,000 to the formula funding. I would just point out that if we're going to invest $35 million, which I am very supportive of ensuring we have full count for our correspondence program, but if we're going to invest that kind of money, we should make sure we get a return on our investment. And that's precisely why, if we're going to do this level of investment, we should absolutely do a level of investment to ensure that the pre-kindergarten opportunities as well as the reading opportunities that are a part of those bills or part of perhaps a future committee bill have the ability to ensure that we're not going to just throw the $35 million, you know, out into the wind, that we're going to actually make sure that that $35 million is an investment in education because we backed it up with a strong reading program and a strong pre-kindergarten program. Ms. Teschner, but am I getting my numbers right when I say that those are the two numbers, the number that Senator Hughes just elicited and then the number that I'm talking about, those two numbers combined, you believe, or maybe that's a question for the commissioner, A, did I have those numbers right, and B, do you believe that will actually make a difference in educating our children?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, I will answer half that and Commissioner will answer the other half, but yes, you those two numbers that you cited were correct. $35 million under Senate Bill 58 and about $17.1 million under Senate Bill 42 and Senate Bill 8, one or the other.
And through the chair, Senator Begich, the question regarding will we get a return for our money, the evidence is money invested in correspondence programs have a great return. Our students and our currently students enrolled in correspondence programs compare very well to students in regular brick and mortar schools. So I would say, yes, we have a high degree of confidence that the return will be great and that we'll see innovation through this program. And I would add just thirdly, look, the pandemic has had an impact and will continue to have an impact. And the bills that this committee is considering, both the reading bills, virtual education, this bill, I think all can work very well in tandem to shape our public education system coming out of this pandemic and into the future in a way that meets families' needs.
Question from Senator Hughes.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, I know some of the federal dollars coming down through the COVID package, even in transportation, they were able to use it and so help us with our UGF shortfall. I'm just wondering, because correspondence picked up during the pandemic and it's still not totally eradicated, whether there's any chance we would be able to use, at least during this crunch period, federal funds that might come down for this $35 million if this were to pass. And I know there's legislation right now that passed the U.S. House that the Senate's considering, but is there any way that we could possibly use the federal funding for this $35 million at least for FY22?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, so as you know, the federal money comes to us in different buckets. The largest bucket goes directly to school districts, and they have wide discretion on how to use the money. And so they could choose to use it that way. We can't direct them how to use those funds. Other buckets include the set aside that comes to the department. And, without any specific commitment, invite and look forward to working with this committee on how we can move the bills, both reading bill, this bill, and other bills forward and help make that happen, possibly using some of those other funds with other projects that we're working on. So that's a yes, it's possible, but that's a conversation that I think, I would want to have with committee members.
And two more quick questions, one from the chair. So I know you can't direct the funds downward, but actually when this increase happens, is there anything, any internal control in the schools or the districts? I mean, this is going to be increased funding for correspondent schools. Is there any way to ensure this actually goes towards correspondent schools?
Through the chair, or to the chair, Holland, I'll ask Heidi to also weigh in on that. But, you know, the funds, the way the formula and the legislature has set up funding is, you know, we base the amount on the student counts, but then we send it to districts and their locally elected school board gets to allocate that. So that's not even a reality in the brick and mortar school. In other words, a brick and mortar school may, based on its student count, generate more funding than it spends. In the district, the local school board decides how best to allocate that funding around the district. And so they may decide to, you know, have a more expensive program at one school, voc ed or something, than they may at another school. And then they also have to balance it out between elementary, high school. So I don't think there's a way to say the money can only go to the school that generates it based on the account. But you know, by and large, districts, you know, keep that in mind and allocate their money that way. Heidi, do you need to clean that up at all?
No, Commissioner, you said it perfectly.
All right. And one last question. We do have a time constraint. We're back. We're running up on the deadline. But Senator Begich.
It's a wonderful clarification, I think, for Senator Hughes that in the bill that is in the Senate, U.S. Senate today, there's a substantial amount of money for summer and other kinds of remedial programming for education directly. It's substantial billions of dollars. And our state got, thanks to our Senate delegation, in that Senate bill, there's an increased amount of flexibility and increased number for small rural population states, including substantial amounts of money also for broadband and other issues like that. So we should see a lot more resources coming into the state. And for the last few years, Mr. Chairman, we have provided outside of the BSA, sometimes as little as 20, but often more than like $30 million or even more to our schools. And the difference is, these various concepts we're talking about, whether it's correspondence school or whether it's the pre-kindergarten or the reading program, actually target the money instead of just kind of tossing it out there. So I think there's a comprehensive package here that could be quite useful for all of us, so combining with those federal resources as well.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Commissioner Johnson, do you have any final closing comments? I'll give you 30 seconds or a minute if you like.
Chair Holland, I always appreciate the opportunity to work with your committee. Please let us know how we can support you in the coming weeks as you consider all these things. And just really appreciate the last two questions from Senator Hughes and Senator Begich. And will make myself available to work with the committee on funding sources to make all these bills happen. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Thank you, Director Teschner. We will now set SB 58 aside. Our next meeting is scheduled for Monday, March 8th. Is there any other business before the committee? Seeing none, we are adjourned at 10:20.